Constant Wonder Kids is a Constant Wonder podcast.
Hi, Wonder Kids. It's Paige. Can you recognize any of these animal sounds? Which animals did you just hear? Some may have been easy to identify, like the owl, but others might have been a little trickier. Whether you recognize these sounds immediately or not, it seems to me that we humans like to pay attention to sounds in the natural world. That's definitely the case for today's guest.
My path to listening came really first through birds. I met some people who had devoted a good chunk of their life to listening to the sounds of birds, not just to identify species, but to pick out individuals and understand what each individual was doing, what its behavior was. And these people taught me, in a way, offered me an invitation into that world to listen in. And I found that just even knowing like half a dozen local bird species was like adding a whole new color or even a new sense into my consciousness.
This is David Haskell. He's a biologist and writer, and one of his favorite things to do is to go out into the natural world and listen to all the wild sounds around him. As you just heard, the first sounds he learned to identify were different bird species. However, over time, he's learned to listen in to very specific sounds, including some that might surprise you.
I was taking a little walk down the road, and this old white pine tree in my neighbor's yard was standing there, and I heard this crunching sound coming from, and I was standing several meters away, this rhythmic crunching sound. And so I stopped, hushed my breathing a little bit, and listened, and then rushed back home and got my sound recorder, because here were the sounds of a beetle's mandible. This is the larva of a cerambycid beetle chewing away at the wood underneath the bark. And this beetle is about as big as my thumb, this larva. So this is a pretty substantial creature crunching away, eating away at the wood.
Wow, I think it's incredible that David could hear the sound of a beetle munching on bark, even if it was a pretty big beetle. Interestingly enough, David wasn't the only one listening in to the beetle's sounds.
There's a downy woodpecker also in the tree, and I'm sure that downy woodpecker had its ears cocked listening for that sound, because if you can dig out a cerambycid beetle larva as a downy woodpecker, that's your meal for the day. I suddenly got caught up in the drama and the magnificence of this creature's life. And then the additional part of the story, of course, which is the woodpecker waiting to see if it can locate the beetle by sound.
David could hear the beetle eating and also see the woodpecker, tracking the sound of the beetle, looking for a tasty meal. What a great insight into the natural world! As he's listened to wild sounds, David has noticed that the environment has a big impact on the type of sounds that he hears.
When I first came to the Rocky Mountains, it was a little frightening, because even small gusts of winds in the Rockies evoke great whooshing sounds from the stiff-needled trees all around them. And so that provides the background to any animal that wants to communicate with other members of its species in this habitat.
David realized that any creatures communicating in the Rocky Mountains were making really high-pitched, loud calls so that they could be heard over the wind. This was even true for big creatures, like elk, who normally make lower sounds.
For example, the elk is much higher sound than most other mammals of its size. I mean, if you do plot a graph of body size against the frequency of sound, larger animals make deeper sounds, just as a cello in an orchestra makes a lower pitched note than a violin does. So as objects and as living beings get bigger, they tend to have lower, deeper voices. But this elk has broken that rule and is calling it a very high pitch. And those high pitched sounds have the effect of vaulting over the mire of a low-frequency sound that the trees have made.
This impact of environment on animal sound wasn't only true in the Rocky Mountains. David could hear differences in wild sounds all over.
If you go to the seashore up in Maine or in Portland and Seattle, lots of waves crashing on sand or on rocky headlands making a great roaring sound. Well, the oyster catchers and the seagulls and the shorebirds have very loud, high-pitched, piercing cries that can cut through that background noise. Woodland birds tend to sing very slow, melodious, whistled songs because those are the kinds of songs that transmit best through dense vegetation, whereas birds on the prairie tend to have much more rapidly trilled, virtuosic sounds. And that's one of the delights of listening for me, is to ask, what's the story behind the sound? Why does a bird or the elk or the rabbit have this particular kind of vocalization? In what way does that reveal something about its habitat, its home, where it's come from, its relationships within and between other species?
I think that it's very interesting that you can learn that much about a creature from the sound they make, even if you don't understand what the animal might be saying. In all these places, David isn't just listening to animal sounds, but wild sounds in general. This can include other living things that we might not normally think of as particularly vocal.
Ponderosa pines are trees of the West, and the last time I was with one was on the Front Range of Colorado. And ponderosas are these magnificent creatures in the gifts that they offer our senses. One of those gifts is about sound. They're some of the most talkative trees that I've ever encountered anywhere in the world.
Huh? How can a tree be talkative?
That's because the ponderosa pines, particularly in the Rocky Mountains, have very stiff needles. And so when the wind blows through a ponderosa pine tree, it lets this great big whoosh out. And it sounds very different from other species of pine trees. I do this quite a lot when I'm hiking out in the West. It's just stop on the side of the trail and listen. And it's not just a sensory delight of the moment, but those sounds weave their way into my nervous system. So I carry part of the tree with me after I've left. And this is one reason why we feel better after going out into the woods and slowing down, slowing our minds and our bodies down to be in relationship with the living world as it is, not always thinking about the past and the future as we usually do in our busy, busy minds.
David believes that when he spends time out in nature, listening to the animals and the trees, he's able to feel better connected to the world and more at peace. Listening to the whoosh of ponderosa pine trees sounds interesting to me, but I don't have those in my backyard. Luckily, David is a big fan of listening to nature nearby as well.
The key practice is just to give the world the gift of our attention. And when I'm working with students on this, I invite them to imagine pouring their attention into their ears just for a couple of minutes, and then sending that attention out in the world, almost like tentacles coming out from the ears. Maybe a little bit of a sci-fi image there. But we can do that. We can direct through an act of the will our ears and our minds then to harvest the sounds that are around us. Pay attention first to the most obvious sounds. And then what was the sound that we didn't even hear because it was too quiet or we were distracted by something else?
Once you start to notice the sounds you hear, David says that you can begin to find words to describe the sounds.
Does it sound pointy or silvery? Does it sound like a big sort of low fog that is gradually spreading from the north, moving south? Or does it sound like it's moving in space in a way that's jolty or smooth? Trying to come up with analogies to imagine the physicality of sound and then communicate it to others is not just a helpful way of paying more attention to sound, but then of stimulating our curiosity about the sounds.
So cool. I'm going to stop talking so that you can listen hard and find a sound that you can describe to someone else. Don't just use words like loud or soft, but think about if it's pointy or smooth or heavy. Ready? Go. Did you hear anything? How would you describe that sound? If you didn't hear anything, don't worry. David has some more advice to help us in our listening.
Pick a particular place and return to it again and again to listen, even just for a minute or two. It could be a street corner, or a tree out in a city park, or a place on the front porch of an apartment. Just hang out and listen for a couple of minutes, and over the days and the weeks, and then perhaps eventually months and years, we'll come to know that place in a way that took us no money, it took us very little effort, but it was just the gift of our attention. And this is like making friends with a human, right? How do you befriend another human being? By listening, not just once, but over and over again, just being listening to their story without judging too much. And we can do the same for our neighborhoods or for a favorite place out in a park or in the mountains or on the seashore, wherever we happen to live, and come to know that place and befriend the living earth.
I love that we can become friends with our planet by listening to it. How special is that? For David, listening to the natural world has given him incredible experiences, whether he's heard an interesting sound for the first time or gotten to know the soundscape of a place over time.
The first time you hear a kookaburra, or the first time you really hear a raven chattering to itself quietly, those are just remarkable experiences that carry us into the lives of other species, that are full of the energy of novelty and of discovery. But then one of the fruits of repeated attention to place is that the sense of wonder at the marvels of the world increases, but also this almost sense of humility in realizing that multiple lifetimes listening in one spot in the woods or on one city street corner would not be enough to understand all the stories that are present in this place.
Listening to wild sounds has opened David up to the stories of the natural world that exist around him. And the same thing can happen to you, too. So the next time you're outside, stop and listen. You never know what story you might hear.
Listen.
A quick word for you parents. I'm Marcus Smith, host of Constant Wonder, which is the source of material for Constant Wonder Kids. We made this episode because Constant Wonder contains a lot of great stuff kids will love too, but you may be wanting more. We've got a whole episode devoted to the multitude of sounds in the natural world. If you want to hear the full presentation, go find Constant Wonder wherever you get your podcasts. It's called Saving Wild Sounds. We actually think that you'll love more than just one episode of our podcast, which is an ongoing quest to find awe and wonder in all nature, human or wild, vast or small. The kinds of encounters that move us beyond words. Remember when you had time for wonder? Well, we suspect you still do. Subscribe to Constant Wonder on your favorite platform. Constant Wonder Kids was produced by Paige Crumperman-Darrington with sound design by Mitchell Towsley. Tenery Taylor is the executive producer. Constant Wonder Kids is a production of BYU Radio.